Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Hopefully the holidays have started to wind down for you. We've started this new year and you've enjoyed a little time with friends and family and kicking off the new year. As COVID surges and politics continues, the country and the state are at a different point than they were a year ago. And that different point has a lot to do with the attitudes and the feelings of where we're at. A year ago, people were more hopeful. Now they are fearful. And ultimately, trust in our government, in our institutions, in each other has deteriorated further in 2021. And going into 2022, we look at those factors and we see political dynamics and we bring our own experiences, our own point of life to it. We're going to talk a little bit about that today in the second cup of coffee. What is the mood of America? How should it change? What are we hopeful for? What are we fearful of? I think the one thing I would say as we enter 2022 is that the one thing we all need to focus on is trust. Rebuilding trust in our institutions, in our leaders, in each other. And I think that quietly that's happening. I just don't think it's expressed much in the media. When you look at the way the pandemic's been handled, when you look at crime, when you look at schools, there are major issues in front of us in 2022. We'll tackle them each week here on Sunday Take with great guests. But ultimately, the one thing in 2022 this show will focus on is trying to rebuild and deepen a trust in the information and the guests and holding people accountable for what they say or an idea they propose with details that we can trust. I'm Blaise Olson. It's Sunday Take. I trust you'll stick with us through the break. Jai Hansen's the first guest today. He's back right after this.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome to Sunday Take on January 2nd, 2022, the first episode of what is sure to be a long political year. And joining me as the first guest of the new year is Jai Hansen. He's running for Hennepin County Sheriff. He announced his candidacy back a few months back. And obviously the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office is received quite a bit of attention, not just lately and not just because of crime, but the the role of the sheriff's office in our communities has shifted since the pandemic. And last week we had Sheriff Dave Hutchinson on talking about his plans to run for re-election. So I thought it'd be timely to have Jai on. Jai, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. The first show of the year, this is going to be a high stakes for me.
Good. Just for the, you know, for the first part here, give a little background about who you are and why you decided to run for sheriff.
Well, I've been a police officer for about 15 years now. I started with another metro agency in Lakeville. And then now I'm with the city of Bloomington. I've been there for about 7 years. And the reason why I chose to run, May 25th of 2020, that was a change in our whole community, and the clock kind of stopped. And not only for the people that live there and for the people that, for, like me, grew up there, but for law enforcement as well. We're at ground zero for, you know, what happened with George Floyd. And May 26th, we knew things needed to change. And I kind of watched how things weren't progressing the way I wanted them to, lack of leadership. And I saw how some law enforcement officials' hands were tied, specifically Minneapolis, and the importance of a sheriff, of an elected sheriff that doesn't answer to a political elected body. And our sheriff, our current sheriff, was missing in action with all the George Floyd stuff. And that kind of got me going that the bar is set so low right now, and we need to do better.
When you say the current sheriff was missing in action, what do you mean by that?
Well, the importance of a sheriff, when you're elected sheriff, again, you don't answer to a elected body. You need to go out there and you need to be vocal. And right after George Floyd happened for me, I went on social media, you know, even as a police officer, knowing that this was the time that we needed to acknowledge what was going on, and what happened was incredibly inappropriate and made me very sad. And we didn't hear those words from our sheriff right away. It was, you know, let's wait for the facts. Let's figure out what's going on. And while he was not out there being vocal, we had a city that was burned to the ground, you know, looting, rioting, and just the civil unrest and the lawlessness that has continued since then.
So when you're discussing kind of who you are and why you decided to run, this is radio, so people might not see that you're a brown guy. Yeah. You are a man of color who grew up in the community. Explain a little more about how that fits into being a police officer. And just for our listeners, you know, when you approach a car during a stop or when you are a part of police culture, what is it that, you know, there's been so much talk about race and color. What does that mean as a police officer of color?
Well, there's so much talk about race and there's also a lot of talk about the blue wall. And we're at a position in our time that we can fix this, and we have educated officers. We have people that want to do the right thing. We have officers that got into this profession to help people. And that's why I got into this profession. And for me, being a person of color and going up to cars and talking to other people, you know, I just hope I can educate people while we're doing enforcement at the same time. And I think we can acknowledge our past. We can acknowledge the past of the criminal justice system and at the same time hold people accountable. And that is my goal for running for sheriff, that we can implement ideas and solutions and reform that can get us to that point.
My guest is Jai Hansen. He's a candidate for Hennepin County Sheriff. He announced his candidacy a couple months ago. Obviously, the sheriff's office has garnered a lot of attention lately. Jai, when you talk about being elected sheriff, not reporting to a board, obviously the sheriff historically and the sheriff's department and deputies have had certain jurisdictions that they have a larger presence in, that they patrol. And there's kind of been seen, you know, kind of a division of responsibilities between MPD and the sheriff over the last, you know, year and a half. Sheriff's deputies have been needed more in Minneapolis. They've been needed more in other communities. Sheriff Hutchinson's asked for more officers. Is there a different view of how the sheriff's office or department and the deputies should operate within the county, considering that, you know, criminals don't care what necessarily what city they're in when they are on a, you know, are carjacking, or, you know, jurisdictional issues are less important when we're in a little bit of a spike here in crime. Give your vision of how that matters and how it's different than maybe the sheriff's department's operated the last few years.
Well, historically, and by state law, the sheriff's office is required to run the jail, our water safety, water patrol, and the courts. But this is where I need people to think outside of the box, and if we're going to fix this, we need to really challenge ourselves, and we need to do more than just those three things. And I'm not saying the sheriff's office needs to come in and handle 911 calls from Minneapolis. That's not something I'm interested in doing. However, we need to help Minneapolis. We need to do targeted teams, that whether that's focusing on certain areas or carjackings, we need to put teams out there that the sheriff's office can help use people and make sure those kind of violent crimes trend downwards. And day one for me, I think we need to have a bigger presence in North Minneapolis. That is one thing that is a focus to me and I'm passionate about. We need to be in North Minneapolis and be visible. And I plan to have my office in North Minneapolis, because if we don't get this crime under control, as we're seeing right now, it is going into the suburbs. So if we're not helping Minneapolis, it will start going out like it has Minnetonka, Edina, Plymouth, you name it, Eden Prairie. So this is what is a focus and a priority to me.
The office is elected. Sheriff Hutchinson was endorsed by the DFL. The previous sheriff, Rich Stanek, was a Republican former legislator. You have some Republicans who are staffers on your campaign. Are you partisan? What's the view of where this office should be and in the politics of it? Because you're on the ballot, and obviously crime and public safety are going to be major issues in 2022. What are your politics, and what kind of politics do you bring to the office?
Yeah, I'm an independent, and I think, you know, for the sheriff's office, this kind of office in our county, it's a nonpartisan office, and it needs to be brought back to a nonpartisan office. When you call 911, we don't ask if you're a Republican or a Democrat. We need to help everybody equally, and that is important to me. And I think the current sheriff being endorsed by the DFL has hindered, our response to violent crime. And for me, I want to make sure I am independent all the way. I have people on both sides of the aisle that are working with my campaign, and I'm proud of that. And that's where I will stay. And I know I'm leaving money on the table when it comes to not seeking an endorsement, but that's a decision I have chosen to do. And at the end of the day, running this campaign, I need to be able to look in the mirror and be proud of it. And I'm very, very adamant that we are independent.
As we wrap up here, Jai, we're in the middle of a huge crime spike. All the numbers, violent crime, carjackings, shootings. what needs to be done and what can the sheriff possibly do if it's up to the prosecutors and the courts to hold criminals accountable, which seems to be one of the major issues right now.
We need a vocal sheriff. We need to work with the county attorney. And if we aren't getting charging done on some of these violent crimes, or people are going to jail and they're out the same day or the next day, the revolving door of our system, we need a sheriff that is vocal and holding people accountable and at the Capitol and in arguing to have stricter penalties. We had, a month and a half ago, a public safety Senate hearing, and our current sheriff was not there. And the two other sheriffs that were there, Chisago County, I believe, and Ramsey County, were focused on talking about the crime in Hennepin County. Yet our sheriff was absent. So we need a vocal sheriff that can get out there and really listen to the people and argue for them.
Sounds great. Jai Hansen's been my guest. I'm sure we'll stay in touch throughout the year and through the campaign, because it is going to be one of those bellwethers of Hennepin County since Sheriff Hutchinson's announced he will seek re-election. Jai, thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you. I appreciated it.
When we come back, what's next for prosecutors? What's next on crime? What do the numbers look like? And what's the mood of America and Minnesota going into this new year? I'm Blaise Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back for the second cup of coffee. Instead of having a guest here, which I tried to do, but apparently end of the year fundraising was more important than talking, we're going to focus on the issues that I see major in 2022. First is the legislative session. With the $7.7 billion surplus, the populist DNA and the current polarization says that the dynamics of this legislative session are really up for grabs. Republicans controlling the Senate and DFLers controlling the House, nobody really needs anything. Republicans would like some tax relief. The governor would like money for childcare. And the DFL House is going to throw out a list of things, including increasing the pool for pandemic pay for frontline workers in the early stages. In history, we would get a bonding bill, but no side needs a bonding bill, although it's something we should think about with inflation and rising interest rates. So session is going to be the first thing to watch. And then in mid-February, redistricting is going to be the issue to watch. We will cover the new maps extensively through Fluence, through WCCO. But really, Greater Minnesota is going to lose some power. The suburbs are going to gain some power. And the urban core is probably going to shift more to the left in candidates and in districts. But ultimately, what redistricting means won't be decided till November, even though we get the maps in February. The candidates. Candidates, I think, are going to matter a lot, not just at statewide level. Remember, we don't have any federal races at the statewide level. So we only have Minnesota's constitutional officers on the board. And with that, it means there'll be less national money in the state. Again, depending on the way the lines are drawn, the candidates in the congressional districts will also be notable. No current highly competitive races, except for maybe Congressional District 2. Watch for the lines. But what I mean by candidates will matter in legislative races, because the DFL and GOP are controlled by extremes, and that more polarizing candidates emerge from caucus systems, it's really important to watch those candidates, those personalities, their social media, what they say, what they stand for, from their economic policy to their policy on elections and voting and democracy, taxes, healthcare. All those issues will be there. Crime will be another one. Tim Walz is also obviously on the ballot, running as an incumbent. And how he runs will determine the fate of the DFL. If he runs strong, which current poll numbers show he should, then DFL should be okay. harken back to 2006 where DFLers did well, but Governor Pawlenty won re-election. The reverse could happen here. Republicans could run well in legislative races, and we could have Governor Walz in the governor's residence again in as the chief executive. See if he can motivate urban liberals who haven't been all that enthused, but would they be enthused with the Republican governor? If he deals with the suburbs and crime effectively, Governor Walz should win re-election looking at the current Republican field, but you just never know. Current GOP field will get a new candidate likely this week in Kendall Qualls, but it needs a populist, somebody who's exciting and energetic. Scott Jensen has shown signs of that. Paul Gazelka has performed better than many have. On paper, Michelle Benson, a senator from the suburbs, a woman, should be able to kind of tap some suburban frustrations. And Dr. Neil Shaw, a doctor, has shown some late energy. But Republicans need to pick their candidate. They need to get behind him. They need to make sure they have energy and resources and money. Because remember, the Republican Party is still in trouble. And then watch the tone of D.C. and watch three big issues: crime, education, and elections. Election integrity, our voting process, all of that throughout the country will be a narrative. Some people in Minnesota, Republicans mostly, will push it here. Minnesota has a very trustworthy track record. Education, it's a sleeper issue, especially in the suburbs. Parents are more frustrated than Democrats acknowledge. And then crime. Governor Walz cannot continue the same levels of crime and the same criminals committing the crimes and getting out of jail. Could be his Michael Dukakis tank moment or his Willie Horton moment. Those are the big issues. Those are the things to watch for in 2022. But as we think more about where we're at, one of the big issues that will be discussed and debated that has populist feel is, how do we regulate social media? 56% of Americans support strongly or somewhat advocating for regulating social media. That includes 68% of Democrats, 46% of independents, and 51% of Republicans. So think about that. A majority of all ideological bands support regulating social media, which will be done in Washington. And 60% of Americans say that social media sites don't do enough to protect users. This lines up as a very populist issue. Think about that. They don't trust social media. And trust remains the major issue. And why aren't people trusting? One big factor is fear. A recent Axios poll shows that we are less hopeful this year than we were last year. Think about that. We wanted to be hopeful at the beginning of 2021, but now we sit at the beginning of 2022, and 54% of Americans said they are more fearful than hopeful, and 44% said they are more hopeful. It's a flip from last year's poll. And Republicans are more pessimistic than Democrats or independents in both years. All three groups were negative this year. What's driving it? Fear. They're fearful of what's in store for the United States. 51% of Americans. That includes 66% of Republicans, 41% of Democrats, and 46% of independents. Think about that. They are fearful as we go into the year. And so think about where we're at as a country. From 2021, a year ago, 30% of the US identified as Democrats, 29% as Republicans, and 39% as independents. That's shifted a little. More Americans right now are choosing Republicans over Democrats. even with Joe Biden in the White House after a year or nearly a year. But ultimately, the self-identification of conservative, liberal, more fractured on social issues has made people fearful and not trust our institutions. Those are the numbers today. That's the mood of America on January 1st, 2022. I think it reflects a lot of the feelings and thoughts of not just Americans, but of Minnesotans. You can find all of this in Monday's Morning Take tomorrow, as well as a copy of the show in its entirety. We'll have full coverage of Election 2022 here on News Talk 830 WCCO, from debates to forums to Sunday Take, every week throughout the year. If you don't get Morning Take or you don't get any of the Fluence newsletters, visit fluence-newsletters.com. We'll have a lot of current content. We'll have breaking news weekly to follow this election. But one thing we will be clear is that trust and using trustworthy information, or identifying where the information we get is from so that you understand their agenda, will always be our promise and our commitment. Because in 2022, I and this station are dedicated to trustworthy information about our election, about our candidates. And we hope you'll continue to tune in each week. When we come back, Chris Ayersman, epidemiologist at Minnesota Department of Health. How's the Minnesota Department of Health dealing with this? What do they know before we know it when the CDC makes some of these decisions? And what does she see in the forecast for COVID and other public health issues? Thanks for listening. I'm Blois Olson. This is Sunday Take. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sunday Take. I'm Blois Olson, your host here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Our final conversation this Sunday for Sunday Take is with Chris Ayersman from the Minnesota Department of Health. We've gotten to know her over the last 22 months or so as we've navigated COVID. And I want to thank Chris for joining us this morning. Chris, Happy New Year, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
So before we get into where we're at today, just personally, where do you kind of reflect here as we start a new year? Obviously, Omicron has meant new twists and turns over the holidays. Have you gotten a chance to kind of take a deep breath or reflect at all on how you'd like 2022 to be different than 2021?
Well, yeah, anytime you're at the end of the year, you're looking back to see what happened. And I think for us in public health, this was a year of highs and lows and everything in between. With the arrival of vaccines, you know, we started the year and it has been such a miracle and so positive that we now have that phenomenal tool in our toolbox. And so on the one hand, that made 2021, you know, a great year. But then we started to see, you know, the arrival of variants, which is certainly what viruses do. They mutate. And those variants have certainly, you know, complicated the picture. So I think it's kind of a good news, bad news story for 2021. But I think what's been incredibly encouraging has been, you know, the greater understanding that we have of the virus, although it keeps taking left turns on us, the fact that we have vaccines and boosters available and we're able to vaccinate all the way down to 5 years at this point, that we have more treatments available. And, you know, so those are the things that we're celebrating, and we're grateful for everyone who has been part of using those tools. And then, you know, what we look at with some discouragement is just the way that the virus has continued to change and continued to challenge us with first Alpha and then Delta, which was more infectious, and now with Omicron that looks to be even more infectious than even Delta. So it's been a year of many emotions, but lots of good emotions too.
I mean, I think that's one of the things that everybody is kind of navigating. You guys at the Minnesota Department of Health have been obviously at the eye of the storm. And, you know, as public health people, you've dealt with, you know, communicating about public health urgency, whether it's tobacco or sexually transmitted diseases or other issues over time. Is this kind of from a planning and or not being able to plan or a communication standpoint, is this kind of, you know, to overuse the phrase, uncharted waters of length of time to try to stay fresh and current and kind of keep people's interest and or alert up? Because it just seems like, you know, depending on what lane of COVID you're in personally, you know, you kind of, your attention span or your interest has changed over time.
Yeah, I think that the duration definitely has been challenging. When I think about public health, you know, that we have public health messages, you know, that are appropriate and happening 365 days a year. But those, they're different messages. It may be time to remind people of the dangers of vaping, or it may be time to remind people of the value of, you know, screening for breast and cervical cancer, or getting a colonoscopy, or get your flu shot. So there are public health messages that we are sharing with the public all the time, but we have never had a sustained period where we have had the same issue and kind of the same messages, if you will, that we've needed to repeat, nor have we had a situation in which a public health event has had so much impact on people's lives. I mean, I think aside from the wars, there haven't been as many things that have interrupted daily life like this pandemic has. And that has made it really difficult to navigate, because you're not just giving a public health message, you're giving it in an environment where your recommendations and guidance have forced alterations in people's lives. And some people are grateful for that and grateful for the protections that that affords, and other people are incredibly frustrated by it. And so it puts us in a really difficult place.
Yeah, no, I think that is just it, is, you know, as I observe and as readers and listeners kind of communicate, you know, there's obviously people in the polarized side of the politics, but there's those people who are just trying to navigate life, work, family, school, those different parts. And, you know, I kind of reflect back on, as I get ready to do something, how easy it used to be, how you didn't even think about going out and doing certain things, or gathering for the holidays, or having a kid home for the holidays. And now there's these other layers, which I think are frustrating. But, you know, I find that most people I talk to just are continuing to kind of take a deep breath and figure out what's next. And so as we think about what's next, obviously, it's really tough to predict the future, but there's some history to viruses. There's some history to kind of how humans may behave or may not behave. What do you think Minnesotans should be thinking about here as we enter the new year, both back to school, back to work, knowing that, you know, boosters are available, and Omicron is here and or likely to be here for a little time?
Well, you know, I think that when you just talked about, you know, it used to be that you didn't think about going out. And I was thinking about this last night when we were walking the dog after dinner and it was cold. And I was thinking, man, you know, you got to put on your hat and your scarf and your boots and your mittens. And it's so much easier in the summer because you just walk out the door. And I think that's kind of the change that we have experienced living with COVID, and that is, and we talk about, you know, the needed layered mitigation. And I think, you know, when I think about moving into 2022, that layered mitigation is going to continue to be really important. And And it's true, though. It's important and it's good, but it's tiring at the same time.
Yeah.
I'd rather just walk out the door in my flip-flops with the dog than put all those clothes on. But I think when we look ahead to this January, this new year, you know, we need to expect that we're going to see Omicron really taking off. We've seen it grow in other parts of the country. We obviously know that it's begun circulating in Minnesota. And so I think people have to expect that we are going to see a large number of cases, a surge in cases in the next weeks. So I would say that's one thing that people should be expecting, is that we will see a surge in Omicron cases in Minnesota. People should expect that and should expect to start seeing it as we get into January. The other thing I think that people should, you know, expect is that we are going to continue to have to use this layered mitigation. And by that, you know, I mean the foundational layer of vaccinating and boosting, you know, and so if you've done it, great. If you haven't, we encourage you to think about it. Again, you know, this is yet another twist to the COVID story, and it's a good time to kind of rethink where you're at. But then also masking, in particular now with really good fitting masks, you know, N95, KN95, you know, using that really good mask, because we know Omicron is really, really infectious. You know, continuing to be cautious, socially distancing, washing your hands. And as you said, kind of thinking through, like, do I really need to go to that event? You know, how important is it? How safe will that be for me? You know, all of those things, I think we're going to continue to need to be thinking that way into 2022. And I know that none of us want to, myself right. included. But I do think that with Omicron, you know, on our heels here and knocking at the door, we really need to be prepared for being cautious into January and February.
My guest is Chrissy Ersman. She's with the Minnesota Department of Health. She's an epidemiologist, and she's been navigating the state through these things of COVID, these layers, these twists and turns. The last week or so, there's been some adjustments on guidance from the CDC. Can you just remind listeners how, when the Minnesota Department of Health finds out about this, how it impacts your work or your guidance to citizens? Because, you know, as a communications person, there is a growing observation. It's been there kind of at different points in the pandemic, but there's a growing observation that the communication has become a big challenge for communications professionals. And obviously, you work with them at all times. But one of the reasons is because there seems to be, specifically from the CDC and other federal agencies, some inconsistencies or some pivots that kind of come about very quickly. How quickly do you guys find out about their guidance, and or how does it affect the way you communicate back to Minnesotans?
Well, you know, unfortunately, what we've seen happen during the pandemic is that state and local public health officials get virtually no warning. And in fact, In the case of the change to you know, isolation and quarantine recommendations that came about last Monday, we saw it in the media. That was how we heard about that, you know, we are not getting any forewarning. And in fact, there had even been a call with, you know, state epidemiologists that afternoon, and they did not bring it up. So, you know, unfortunately, I think the public gets frustrated, and I certainly don't blame them. You know, what's this new thing and what's happening? And it feels like there's always a lot of loose ends. And yet that's how it feels to us too. And our challenge is that CDC has announced, they have made an announcement that they, you know, intend to make changes to their guidance, but they have not yet updated their guidance. And so we have, you know, just the most basic information from them, but not sufficient so that we can update our guidance appropriately in Minnesota. And just to kind of explain that a little bit more, what I mean is that, you know, they just have a statement about, you know, reducing the recommended time for isolation from 10 days to 5 days, you know, that type of thing.
Yep.
But typically we have, you know, different sectors have different recommendations. So healthcare has a different recommendation. Individuals who may work in corrections or, you know, jails, homeless shelters, they can have guidance that's more specific to their setting. You know, we don't have any information about that or for schools or childcare. Yeah. And so, you know, we're in a really tough place because there's this, you know, kind of guidance hanging out there that there's a change, and yet we can't responsibly make changes until we get greater granularity. Like, what do you do for a child less than two who, you know, has COVID, but we don't recommend that kids that age mask? Does that change the guidance? There was no language related to individuals who'd had prior illness. So yes, it's really difficult. And unfortunately, state and local public health officials are getting less and less forewarning about some of these changes. And so it puts us in a challenging place, and it certainly makes the public think they don't seem to know. They didn't seem to know this was going to happen. And that's actually a pretty accurate evaluation of what's been going on. We didn't know. We don't oftentimes know changes are coming.
Well, Chris, I appreciate you joining Sunday Take today. I hope you got a little rest over the holidays, and maybe even in 2022, there'll be a week where you don't have to tell us about something about COVID, because I know it has been exhausting. So thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It was good to be with you.
When it's Sunday at 9, you're listening to Sunday Take on WCCO. Have a great week and Happy New Year.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.